Hello, Greystone members. Welcome to the next edition of Greystone Unscripted. We're excited to have you join us today. We have two incredible guests with us. We have Ray Cronin and Ray Crippen from Club Benchmarking. Club Benchmarking is a company that we've worked with here for the last 10 years. They benchmark the data of all clubs in the country. Right now, I believe they'll share with you about 12,000 clubs in their 1,200 clubs in their database, and they'll explain a lot more about how that data makes sense to us. But I think it's really an interesting and incredible exercise for the members to learn a lot more about our expenses, our needs, and so we'll get kicked off. Ray Cronin's the founder and president of Club Benchmarking. They've been around for 16 years. Ray Crippen's the executive director. We just had them at our board retreat 2 weeks ago in Atlanta. So this is kind of all fresh information. I'm excited to have these guys join us today. Thank you, guys.
Good to be here. Thank you, Dave.
Thanks, Dave. Happy to be here.
Ray Cronin, if you don't mind, can you share a little bit from your side on the Club Benchmarking company and how it came to fruition?
Sure. Yeah, we started actually on April 1st, 2009. We were about 16 and a half years old. I had the idea for the business. I belong to a couple of clubs, but one is about 20 miles outside south of Boston. And when I became involved in the governance, I will admit I'm probably a numbers guy. I've always trained, when you make business decisions, you make them with data. In fact, we had lots of discussions. I like to hang out at the club. I love golf. There's lots of opinions. There's lots of opinions across the industry. But what we do is we gather the financial and operational data and other data from, as David said, about 1,200 clubs in North America. We get about 150 in Australia and New Zealand, and another 150 in the UK and Ireland. So about 1,500 clubs altogether. And we just study the data. So we have fact-based insight, as we refer to it, and we work with these 1,200 clubs in North America to allow them to apply it to make better decisions. It's that simple. We've learned a lot. Ray's been with us. I'll let Ray introduce himself for about, 18 months now, Ray? A little over. So Ray can say hello and give you his background.
Yeah, thanks, Ray. It's good to be here. Thank you, Dave, for having us. Yes, Ray Crippen. I come from the club management side of the business. So I was a GM COO for the last 20 years before joining on with Club Benchmarking. But I like to say I drank the Club Benchmarking Kool-Aid a long time ago. I first met Ray probably in the 2010-2011 timeframe. And once I saw his presentation and the information he was sharing, I made it my mission to have him come to all my board retreats every year that the board would change over with new people coming on and, you know, other members going off the board. I'd have Ray come do a complete walkthrough of all our KPIs and, you know, the pressing issues in private clubs and best practices and those types of things. So I've been a Club Benchmarking for a long time, even though I've only been part of the company for, like Ray said, for about 18 months. And it's good to be here. As the executive director, I handle all the most of the Southeast clubs, minus Florida. We have another executive director, and all that person does is focus on Florida. I handle everything from Texas to the Carolinas.
All right. Well, let's kick off into the fun stuff that I know Ray likes to talk about. Kind of for the first intro, I always think it's fun for the members to hear. What are the most often misperceptions that you hear from members, board members, when you're first starting to meet with them and even at your own club that you're dealing with?
Yeah, that's a great question. There are two in my mind that come right to mind. The first one is what we refer to as the food and beverage trap. Before we began gathering this data, even to this day, but much less so, but the conventional wisdom in the member-owned club world was that the financial outcome of a club kind of hinged on whether the club made or lost money in food and beverage. I can say with great confidence, not because I know something that anyone doesn't, but because the data tells us that food and beverage financial outcome has nothing to do really ultimately with the financial outcome of a club. We'll leave that for a little later to dig into. The second point is that there is this inherent conflict of interest that exists in member-owned clubs, and it is such as members of a club, we are also owners of the club. And in the role as owner, we effectively get to set the price for using the club for ourselves. And the data shows pretty clearly that far too many clubs set the price too low. About 3/4 of the clubs in the industry over the last 20 to 25 years, we use 20 to 25 years as the tenure, the average tenure of a member. Before the pandemic, it was 20 years. Now it's 25 because attrition's gone down. But over that period of time, about 3/4 of the clubs in the industry have set the price too low. Now, I know there's certain people who might hear that and not be happy to hear it right out of the gate, but it is what it is. And so those two issues, the food and beverage issue and the cost of belonging issue, I would say, David, are at the root of many misconceptions that exist across the industry.
And David, if you don't mind me chiming in on this, I would like to illustrate the point on the food and beverage side of this thing. If our company, if all we were there for was to help people better understand food and beverage, we'd all still be working full time. Okay. Every club, it approaches us and asks us questions about food and beverage. But Ray's absolutely right. Those are the two prevailing issues.
All right. Well, let's go, back to 2 weeks ago, we had our board retreat and Ray brought up some really good slides and data for the board and showed them some great comparisons of where our dues sit and where our capital revenue, our operating revenue sits in comparison to some of the high achieving clubs and where we kind of sit on payroll and wages versus total revenue, those type of facts. Would you be willing to share those with the members and talk them through?
100%. Let me just pull up those slides, please. Just start real quick with a kind of a high level overview of a couple of critical points that I really believe it's important for members to understand these points. The first one is there's two ledgers that clubs use to account for their finances. One is referred to as the operating ledger. The other one is referred to as the capital ledger. Back to the two roles I mentioned earlier, being an owner and a member, we enjoy the club as a member, and the mechanism that funds that experience is the operating ledger. So that's the monthly dues that we pay. It's all of the expenses that it takes to operate the club day to day, week to week, year to year. The capital ledger accounts for our entrance fees or initiation fee income, recurring capital dues and any assessments that come and go. It also has some of the capital expenses, which would be depreciation, interest on debt. It's not technically an expense in finance or accounting, but the repayment of debt, the principal payments on debt, and then lease payments. So they're on the capital ledger. All the rest of it's on the operating ledger. The most important point I feel that we've learned, and I think it's a really critical point for members to understand, this is a bit of an eye chart, but this captures it. We went through this with the board, as David said a couple of weeks ago. And by the way, people might think I'm lobbying or advocating. I'm not. I'm from Boston. I'm a pretty direct guy. I'm just reporting what I observe and what the data tells us. But your board, the board at Greystone, who Ray and I spent 2 days with, as David said a couple of weeks ago, is a very solid board. I really believe they are objective. I believe they want to embrace the facts, and I believe they really, really, really want to do the right things for Greystone. It's a really difficult business, member-owned clubs, and it goes back to that conflict of interest being owners and members that I talked about earlier. But generally speaking, this chart, which is the most important thing I feel like I've learned in the 16 plus years I've been studying this, is critical. The blue line here is the bottom line of the operating ledger. So it's the operating margin. So it's just the operating surplus or deficit divided by the operating revenue. You can see the median, which is kind of akin to the average. The median club in the last fiscal year had an operating margin of 1%. Greystone is these large circles. Greystone had an operating surplus just outside what we refer to as the break-even zone of 5%. From our research, we know an operating margin of 4% or less is not a substantive financial outcome. The gold line here is the capital ledger, the top line of the capital ledger, capital income, put into the same context. So it's capital income divided by operating revenue. The median club had 20%. Greystone had 20%, a little bit less than the median. That's just rounding. Ideally, you know, clubs have as much capital income as needed. And I will say this, if the operating ledgers break even, by definition, it's not a financial driver. So we have to understand that. The purpose of the operating ledger is to deliver the member experience. It's to keep the golf courses in good shape. It's to keep the food hot and the beer and wine cold. It's to pay for the staff who delivers the experience. The capital ledger is the financial driver. That capital income that in Greystone's case was 20% of the operating revenue last year, that's the free cash that clubs have to drive themselves forward financially. It's capital income and capital investment that are at the root of the financial outcome of a club over time. And then when you couple that, when you look at the balance sheet, it's really important insight. But in this, we show the average club's balance sheet in blue, and then we show Greystone's in green. And you'll notice how closely they approximate each other, with the exception of your debt to equity ratio, which I'll get into in a minute. The key point is, I'm rounding, 75% of what a club owns is the net book value after accumulated depreciation of the physical assets, plant and equipment. So 75% of what a club owns is tied up in physical assets. That's a really, really critical point. The most capital intensive industry on the industrial spectrum is generating and distributing power, be it electricity or gas. It takes $3 of capital investment to generate $1 of revenue. Well, in clubs, it's the same, effectively. It takes $3 of capital investment, I'm rounding slightly, to generate $1 of revenue. Clubs are capital intensive businesses. And we have to understand that. And in a capital intensive business, monitoring and managing physical assets becomes essential to the financial outcome of a club over time. Now, a couple of more metrics, please, David, that are really important for members to understand. One is, if those physical assets are critical, what we can do is we can measure how far through their depreciated life they are. We use the net to gross property, plant, and equipment ratio. Net is the book value after depreciation. Gross is what we paid for the equipment. Every club's going to have a ratio between 0 and 100%. Red bucket clubs have a ratio of 35% or under. What that means is their assets are more than two-thirds of the way through their depreciated life. That's visible to the naked eye. You can see the deferred capital maintenance or the deferred capital investment with your own eyes. Now, Greystone, look where you are. You're well into the upper quartile, which is a nice thing. That's got to do with a lot of the investments that you've recently done, including one of your golf courses. But the key, then, if we go back to your balance sheet, is to recognize that because of the capital, the historical capital income at Greystone, which was below ideal, you had to rely on debt. You had to rely on bank debt in order to do that capital investment. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so Absolutely. We're going to dig into that a little bit. I'm just going to give you one more metric, please, for some more context. But we've discovered that this equity, assets equals liabilities plus equity, is true on every balance sheet. Equity in a private member-owned club, we've come to understand now, is simply this. It's what happens on the capital ledger. If the operating ledgers break even, what happens on the capital ledger is where retained earnings or lack thereof emanate. So it's the capital income minus depreciation and interest expense. If a club has enough capital income to overcome those expenses, the book value or equity will go up. And if it doesn't, the equity will go down. So we've measured this now for 1,400 clubs. And I want to show Greystone in relation to the Country Club of Virginia in Richmond, which they let us show their net worth over time with their permission. They grow it every year and have so for many, many, many years. They have a very advanced formula for how much capital income the members must contribute. Greystone, as you can see here, has had a very sporadic up and down, decreasing, some increasing. Its history is a little bit, we'll call it flat. Your compounded annual growth rate of net worth is effectively zero, which means that you're falling behind in terms of maintaining your physical assets, since that equity represents 75% of what it represents as the physical plant. So you caught up with the deferred maintenance by using debt because your capital at your availability of capital was below ideal, as evidenced right here. And one of the key components of a great capital plan like at CCV is recurring capital dues. And we've been working with Greystone since about 2016 or 17, and you began to institute recurring capital dues in that time frame. And you can see now the uptick of the net worth of the club. That's tremendous. The board from that time frame should be commended for making that decision. But as I did just show you, your capital income was a little below the median. You know, we probably still have some work to do in that regard, because now we have to do two things at Greystone. Keep investing in the physical plant and pay that debt back. That's introduction to some of the higher level metrics, David.
Yeah.
If you'd like, I could show a few of the operational ones too right now, and we could discuss as a whole.
I think that'd be fantastic. You know, go ahead.
We mentioned that you know, on the operating ledger, you have the operating dues that the members are paying monthly, and then the ancillary fees like food and beverage that we pay for services and amenities. If you look at Greystone on an 18-hole equivalent basis, because you have 36 holes, your member count's a little bit below the norm, full member equivalents, and your dues are well below the norm. So if you think of the dues engine, dues revenue covers, in the average club, a high proportion of the operating expense. It's about 55%. At Greystone, your dues revenue is only covering 45% of your operating expense. And we know that one of the critical operating ledger metrics is the ratio of dues revenue to total operating revenue. The median club right now is around 52. You're at 43, and you're in the 12th percentile. This is an issue. So that means that because your dues are below the norm and your member count's below the norm, you don't have as strong of a dues engine as the average club does, which means you have to rely on the management team ultimately to bring in some outside revenue, like, let's just say, Monday or Thursday golf outings. How many outings do you do, David, a year?
It's 36.
And so those people are paying, what's a typical greens fee for an outing?
Well, it's a $250 package. $150 goes to the bottom line for greens fees?
Yeah, so 250, 100's going to food and beverage, 150's going to the greens fee. So that's a way that the management team helps to make up for what I would refer to as a little bit weaker than the normal dues engine here. And they do that, and it's okay. But then what's happening is non-members are effectively funding some of the operating expenses at Greystone. And what we've learned is the industry's moving, clearly the industry's moving to a more member-centric experience and a more member-centric funding model. And this, these data points would be indicative that Greystone might have some work to do in that regard. And then one more metric I'll just show you is, you know, your payroll. So dues revenue, 100% margin, the rest of operating revenue is not. It's low margin generally, except greens fees. So because you have less of your expenses covered by dues, it puts pressure on the management to manage the club tightly. And you can see that evidenced by your payroll ratio. Your payroll to revenue ratio is in the 12th to 13th percentile, which is lower than 9 out of 10 clubs. So I don't want to patronize anyone, but I want to make it clear that David and his team are doing a very good job of managing Greystone in a situation where there probably should be substantially more dues revenue is the reality.
Yeah.
And then if I'll leave you with the last metric, we talked about the two metrics, you know, your food and beverage operation, its subsidy is a little bit lower than the norm. And that's in light of the using dues revenue. There's a technicality there, you know, so every metric we look at would suggest that at Greystone, you have pretty tight operational control of what's going on.
So if you look at we're a $17.5 million in revenue business and our dues are only about 7.2. I would love to see us get to at least 50%. So that 5% that we're producing as an operating profit, from what you see at other clubs, does that show that we're doing some hard work on the backside to try to generate that revenue?
Yeah, definitely. I think from the data, we work with you on some of the capital planning, but that 5% surplus, part of the outcome of that is because you have to do it because your capital income isn't where it probably needs to be. So you're trying to make up for that by using the operating ledger to generate some capital. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely. I mean, that money's going right to capital and members here surplus, that there's no one getting a dividend check. It's going back into the operation.
Right.
And one of the things I think I've told you in the past is we're actually, from the developer, we stayed for profit. And one of the major reasons is we have to live on all these outside events. And if we were a 501c7, we'd only be able to have 15% of our total revenue come from non-member business. And right now we're probably 20 to 22%. Some years, 25%.
That's a really important point. And I want to address something there, if I may. We're working with about four or five clubs that are in the midst of turnover from a developer to the members, just like Greystone did several years back. You know, normally it takes somewhere between 8 and 15 years to develop a club fully. How long did it take to do Greystone?
The members have been in control since 2009, so we're right about
in, at that. And how long did it take to build out the community?
Oh, about from to 2020. I'm sorry, 2001.
Yeah, so it was like a 12-year build-out?
10-12-year build-out, yeah.
And so you're right in the middle of that window. What happens in this industry is developers use the club and the golf courses as loss leaders to draw in people to buy the real estate. They build the amenities as a means of marketing the real estate. And we've worked with many, many clubs after they've been turned over, and we're working with clubs before and during now. And I'll just say this, generally speaking, developers don't leave clubs in healthy condition. They don't really generate capital income when they're turned over because the developer didn't do it because they were using it as a loss leader. If it takes 12 or 15 years to build a community out, when the members take ownership of the assets, they're already substantially into their depreciated life and they have no capital income. And so this kind of up and down that was going on at Greystone, you know, this is going back to where your turnover occurred. These are all typical signs of a residential community club that's been turned over. And it takes time for the members to gather the steam to run it as a member-owned club such that it has adequate capital and it can reinvest in its physical assets. That this uptick over here of net worth literally is where Greystone began turning the corner as a member-owned club. If we were to look at this 5 years from now, David, we need that to keep going up and to the right. And the way that's going to go up and to the right is through increased capital income. It's that simple.
So staying on that same topic, just to remind the members of the history, you helped us, the impetus to try to help me get the board to understand through facts and data in 2017. We had a $50 a month capital fee at that time, and it was all being used for debt service. And initiation fees were actually in our operating budget. So we were just scraping to try to have $100,000, $150,000 a year to help with any capital replacement that was an emergency. So deferred capital became a big deal. I saw it coming from the day I got here, but so you know, you need the facts and the experts to try to help you explain it. And I'm so thankful, and the club should be thankful that you helped us with that. In 2018, we implemented an increase to 150. So it automatically generated 700,000 more in revenue. And today that's 1 million because we have more members. And now we're up to 165 a month. So over the period of time from 18 to 25, it's over $6 million. Thanks to the members. And I know the members that have been here all that time have seen the improvement of us being able to not have deferred maintenance and replace what we need to replace. And obviously we've taken on some more debt as well, but we've also moved our initiation fees to capital. We've also had the commission from the region's tradition that we're fortunate to have. So, you know, that helps us generate over 2 million, well over 2 million in revenue for capital each year, which obviously still isn't enough, but I just wanted to give the story so they could see it and how important those little ticks look like they're not so big, but how important they were.
Well, if that 6 million, to your point, Dave, your net worth, the book value of Greystone is about 25 million now. If you didn't have that 6 million, you'd be at 19 million. If you were at 19 million, your physical assets would be a mess. You wouldn't have the net to gross that you do. Or if you had the net to gross you did, you'd have 6 million more of debt. That's the only way it could be where you are. And then the club would be in a precarious position. So that was a mission critical decision. And I want to emphasize something, please. Back to the dual role that members have as members and owners slash stewards. Look, no one wants to pay more. I get it. I belong to a couple of clubs. I understand that point. But that's a point of self-interest. What we're talking about here is the health of the corporation, the club. And the club needs the money. And the only way a club can get capital income is from its owners. That's the only way it can get it. You can't cook hamburgers and get it. You can't have enough greens fees and get it. You literally have to get it from the owners. And the whole point of being an owner in these clubs, particularly a residential community club, is to make sure that we keep the club in enough shape, good enough shape, that we can attract the next generation of members and we can keep the place in business. A 54-hole residential community club went out of business in Sarasota in July. Anyone can look it up. It's public record. It's called The Meadows. Really, really terrible thing. What happened in that community in the last year, the real estate prices there have declined by 12%, whereas in Sarasota as a whole, they've increased by 1%. Florida's having a little struggle in real estate. the Sarasota market's still strong. So the market went up 1%, and the homes in that community declined in value by 12%. That's a 13% difference. And it's because the shared assets that were the club, the golf courses, the 54 holes were so depreciated and dilapidated, it brings the community itself down. And that's a really important point. The Meadows, unfortunately, was one of those communities that got turned over without mandatory membership, just like Greystone. And that can become an issue. If the club members don't reinvest properly, that can become an issue for those who have homes in that community.
Right. So if you're, 38%, we have 1,400 homes, 38% of our residents are members, about 520. So those members that are residents and the 62% that are residents and not members, I know you just said it, but I just want to make sure they get the message that how much the club impacts their home value.
Yeah. Look, I'm going to probably tick some people off that hear this. That's the way it goes. I don't believe that it's actually proper even for a developer to turn over a club without mandatory membership. It causes all sorts of issues down the line. If you think about it, in your community, just using the numbers you just cited, Dave, if 38% of the homeowners in Greystone are members and 62% aren't, well, those 38% are kicking in money that keeps the value of the other 62% up. Those 62%, you get a benefit from the club. If that club went bankrupt like the Meadows did, it's not going to help the real estate prices. I think everyone in the community would agree with that. So, I would say suggest to some of those 62%, geez, if you haven't become a member or tried it out, why not? You're probably going to enjoy it. And oh, by the way, you're probably going to help yourself because you're keeping the club strong and it's going to come back in your real estate price. There's data that actually we have on this. So at Greystone, there's $34 million worth of assets, plant and equipment at the club. And that works out to $43,000 per member. So for those 38% of folks who belong to the club and live in the community, effectively what it means is if they have a house worth $1 million, well, they're on the hook for another $43,000 worth of assets that they're a shared owner in, that they need to keep fresh and up to date, just like they would keep their house fresh and up to date. That's all it is. But those shared assets, this $34 million of assets that winds its way through that beautiful community, I've been there several times, is a key strategic aspect to that residential community and property owners association, without question. And it is important because it is a community and it is important that everyone understands what's going on. I mean, that's just the reality of it.
Right. So the members that are listening to all this and thinking, all right, well, how do you know how much money we need for capital? You're just working off depreciation. What I want to make sure they know is that, we have used reserve studies in the past and get a 30-year Excel spreadsheet that's not being kept up to date regularly. You've all in the last few years come out with a great program called Compass, and you help us build our actual physical assets, every single asset we have on property. And wanted to see if you could share with the members, or if Ray Crippen could, a little bit more about Compass and how that's going to help us moving forward in the future.
Yeah, I'll just say something real quick and then Ray can add to it. But the whole point of capital planning and what we've learned thus far in this session is the operating ledger isn't the financial driver. It's the capital ledger. It's capital income and investment. And that keeping those physical assets fresh and up to date is critical. So what we're trying to do now is we work with about 300 clubs and we help them by doing analysis, detailed analysis. We go on site, we itemize every single physical asset the club owns, and we discuss with the department heads responsible for those assets when they need to be replaced. We do this as a matter of course with hundreds of clubs, so we have a replacement cost database, so we can actually quantify how much capital a club needs looking down the road. We use a 10-year rolling model, and the idea is to try and avoid assessments or the reactive use of debt by assuring that the club members are paying recurring capital dues that are adequate to keep these assets, in your case now, where they are. But in your case, we have to keep them where they are while we're paying the debt off. That's the trick now at Greystone. And we know how to do that, and we're working with you to create that model. But I really believe Compass, as you refer to it, that's what we call it. It's an acronym for Comprehensive Asset Management, is really, really the root of financial success over time. And Ray, you know, please add anything you'd like to that.
Yeah, so the Compass is, there's no better way to say it than it's a game changer for our industry. You're speaking to someone who also did a capital reserve study several years ago and was presented an Excel spreadsheet. And it is good the day you receive it, but keeping that information up and current, quite frankly, is a nightmare. And what Club Benchmarking has done is we've made it all software-based now. And so it's a living, breathing document that's constantly being updated. So you always are aware what the outlook is from what your capital needs are. And you're also able to better forecast out what your capital resources are. And when there's a gap between those two components, you can strategize for ways that you can overcome those funding gaps. And it's an amazing tool to work with. I'm not going to go through the whole thing right now because we just don't have enough time for that. But there's so many good things about it. The only other thing that I want to mention and highlight is, as Ray mentioned, we have 300 plus clients that are participating in this. Well, these are clubs all over the nation, and everybody is buying the same equipment. And what we're able to do from a replacement cost standpoint to better forecast out is somebody is replacing a piece of equipment this year that is probably somewhere on your replacement plan for, you know, the next 2, 3, 4 years. And when that piece of equipment gets replaced and we're notified about it, we're at least once a year, we're going to notify all of our clients that have that similar piece of equipment. Hey, this is what the current replacement cost is, because that is the most difficult part of any reserve study, is really knowing what that replacement cost is going to be. Because if you don't know what it's going to be, you can put some inflationary measures in there, but we can get you real-time information this year, like Toro Rough Mower, this is what it's going to cost you to replace it. And if you're replacing it in 3 years, you can adjust accordingly based on knowing what today's dollars are. So anyway, it's a great tool. And the last thing I'll say about Compass, you get Club Benchmarking whenever you subscribe to Compass, as Greystone has done. That means we work hand in hand with you. We help make sure all that data stays current. We work directly with Dave and CFO there to make sure all that information is current.
That's great. I mean, it's been exciting for us. We aren't using it yet, but getting all the data in there, and then we're going to unveil it here to the finance committee and the board. I guess we've talked with your team members, do that in September, and then it'll help us for our planning for the 2026 budget. So really excited to get working with that. And just so the members realize, just as one example, if they, that they can relate to, we just finished paving our parking lot at Legacy and expanding it. So now we'll take that invoice, but with the exact, since we expanded it, with the new square footage and everything that's included in it, give that to your team, and then they'll put it in the database. So in 20 years, we'll know what we're dealing with versus the parking lot we had in the past. So those are some great aspects of it for us. A couple of quick ones here for you before we let you guys go. Ray, one of the things that you usually touch on, I wanted to make sure the members realize, is that all the data that you're giving us, like, so hypothetically dues and where we sit, how about if the member says, well, what about New York or Chicago? You know, you're comparing us to those clubs.
Yeah, There is, I completely understand it. It's a rational thought, I suppose, but it's incorrect, frankly. There is a thought that somehow geographic location has an impact on circumstances. I can say with great confidence it does not. There are clubs in, let's say, let's use New York. There are clubs in New York that have dues of $5,000, and there's clubs that have $50,000 dues. There's clubs with low initiation fees, high initiation fees. The same is true in Birmingham. If you look across Birmingham, some of those clubs have relatively high initiation fees, many of them, and relatively high dues. So it's not really the geographic location. What we know, it goes back to the point of clubs being high fixed cost, capital intensive businesses. We know that the dues revenue a club needs is directly related to its footprint. So that $36 million of physical assets that I showed you that Greystone owns, that's what drives the amount of dues revenue that's necessary. It's related to that.
Right.
And one other factor, which is how many members you have.
Right.
So if you have a club with a lot, with very high dues, they tend to have fewer members, and they have to amortize those fixed costs over fewer members, so the dues are higher. So you can never compare dues straight up. If anyone wants to do that, it's a, what we would say, using old language, a fool's errand. You can't compare dues from one club to the next without knowing A, what's the scale of the footprint, and B, how many members are there? Those are the three variables of the equation. And I did show you the data that I showed, which I'll put up one more time here. But the data that's here, it's really important that the members see this. The data that's here, this data is red, yellow, red, orange, yellow, and green bucket clubs. I showed you that there's great variation across the industry in terms of the health of clubs. So this isn't because you're in Birmingham. To be frank, this is because of the culture at Greystone where your dues are. It's ultimately been a choice that's been made. But your dues at that club are $4,000 less than the median club with golf. And your member count's below the norm. So, you know, reality would say you want to try and get these to the right a little bit such that you have more money. I mean, I'll just give you an example of how this manifests. You know, being a golf nut, I thought I might show you this. The amount of dues revenue you have is what drives how much money you have to maintain the golf course. Your dues revenue per 18-hole equivalent is at the 25th percentile. It's $2.5 million less than the median. And the meaning, what that means is you're going to have less money to spend maintaining your golf course, which you do. It's pretty amazing, actually, where you are. That goes back to the health of the management team. Theoretically, you'd be closer to the 25th percentile here, but you're squeezing as much as you can out of the operating ledger to get a certain amount of money that the members will be happy with each of your 18-hole facilities. But you can see it all tied together. Your dues revenue per 18-hole equivalents at the 25th percentile. Your member count is below the norm. Your dues are below the norm. I showed you earlier the dues ratio. The dues ratio is below the norm. The amount of money you have to cover operating expense by dues is below norm. These are all just signs of two things. One's probably a little bit of, you know, rougher news. One is that, frankly, you're probably not charging what's necessary. But the second one is that you have a management team that's holding it together and you know, still producing an operating surplus. So that's, you know, kudos to you and your team, Dave.
Thank you. Would it be fair to, for the members to, because we say it and I think they think we're blowing smoke, but is it fair to, another compounding issue for us is two separate campuses?
100%. I mean, a lot of 36-hole facilities, as you know, I'm going to guess, I don't know this, it's more anecdotal, but I'm probably going to be pretty close with this. I'll say 8 out of 10 36-hole facilities have one golf course maintenance building.
Right.
You have two.
Yeah.
And that's because of how far apart the two courses are.
Right.
So to your point, even under that, there's some other issues that put stress on the equation. So with that being said, I do want to make the point, because it sounds like in my own ear, it might sound like I'm advocating. What I'm advocating for is not the decisions you make there. What I am advocating for is that your members understand what we just showed.
Right.
Because to your point, and I know I've been in over 900 clubs. I was on my club board. I didn't finish the story for 10 years and president for 3. I've lived this. This isn't theoretical to me. I love the club I belong to. The thing that members have to try to embrace is they really have to ask themselves when they are in a mode of questioning and doubting. They really have to ask themselves, how do I really know? Do I really have a fact-based view? Because what we just showed you are the facts. And you can run from them, but you can't hide from them.
Right.
And if you try to run from them, and you do it to an extent over too long of a time, all I'll do is point back to the Meadows in Sarasota. Poor decisions yield poor outcomes.
Right.
You guys have it on track at Greystone. I think, you know, we've done a lot of work with the boards over the last several years. I really do feel like you've got a culture now that's kind of got more momentum towards making the place as great as it can be. Would that be a fair statement?
Oh, definitely. Last 4 to 5 years.
So all I say is you try to keep
positive.
It going.
Yeah.
Just try to keep it going.
Right.
I love watching it on the Golf Channel. So let's keep that going.
Yeah. I know this is beating a dead horse, but when we were sitting around after you guys left at the board retreat and we had dinner, a lot of the guys are talking about how in their golf groups, some of their friends or partners would say that they feel like the club that we're spendaholics. I know you've been through enough today telling everybody, but if you were going to react to that while you're out here playing with some members you never met before, and they said, this damn club's a bunch of spendaholics, well, how would you respond to them?
Well, if I was going to react to my Bostonian Northeast-based, you know, kind of just tell it as it is, anyone can say whatever they want, but they're just not correct. I'm sorry.
The
data's clear as a bell.
Yeah.
You're not even close to spendaholics. In fact, the reality is you need more money. You need more money to do it properly. That's the reality.
I appreciate that. I mean, the whole point of doing this podcast was for the members to simply just get educated and understand. I think it's, if you're going to be a member of the club and invest your social dollars, your emotional self and your time and make it part of your family, you should be educated and try to understand more about how the club operates. I'm so thankful for you guys. Do you, anything else you want to share with them before we close out?
I'm good. Yeah. Ray.
I just want to say thank you to your members that log in and watch this podcast. You should be commended for that. You know, you're trying to understand your club better, and hopefully we add some perspective for you.
No, it's been great. You guys are incredible. Thank you. Ray Cronin, if Red Sox make it to the playoffs, I'll be up there in Boston with you, buddy.
Hopefully they will.
So, <Yep. laughs>
good luck.
Thanks for being with
us.
Hope you all have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Take care.
Care.